This episode is sponsored by Masterworks.io. If you're looking for an alternative asset sector investing style, check out Masterworks.io.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
The Leviathans of the stock market universe are just getting bigger. Stock splits seem to be tickling investors' fancy. The Fed is slow rolling their next move, and our guest today is Pierce Crosby, the general manager of TradingView. All this and much more on episode number 676 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Very good day to you. It's Andrew Horowitz here. And I think, well, South Florida's getting lucky again, and I'm pretty happy about that. Seems like two hurricanes are creeping through the area, through the Gulf, just missing South Florida. But the Gulf states, of course, are, well, you got to watch out. Louisiana, Texas, the Panhandle, seems to be two. I think this is historic. Two hurricanes coming within a couple of days from each other to the same spots. Ugh. Anyway, be careful out there. Make sure that you're buttoned up and ready for whatever does in fact happen. It's hurricane season, and we know what's happening. For those of you not in the region, not in the area that gets hurricanes, it is that time of year that we're all on alert in the Florida region, in the Gulf region. And of course, we know what kind of destruction. So everybody be careful about that. I thought we'd start with a quick discussion about what's going on with markets. Again, I get a lot of questions about, you know, why is this happening and how come we have this going on and this is going on over here? A lot of it doesn't make sense to a lot of people. But what's happening right now in the markets, I'm talking about specifically the markets, the stock markets, and what's happening when you look at indices, is that the biggest of the big are taking over. It was a week last week, for example, where we had the mega caps just absolutely rocketing higher. And that took the indices on a ride higher and higher and higher because most of the indices are market cap weighted, meaning, and we've talked about this, but for those of you that don't remember, what this means is that the larger stocks have more of a percentage weighting inside of that index. So for example, when you're looking at the Russell indices, the S&P 500, the NASDAQ, and several others, those are market cap weighted. So now that we're having more money flowing into the area of the super, you know, the gigantic mega caps, what's happening is those are getting bigger. They're getting a more or a greater proportion of the overall weighting inside of those indices. And as that's happening, you also have index investors that are investing in these indices, and it's creating this incredible, this momentum for the larger stocks that are just getting larger. So, for example, we look at Friday. Just Friday, this last week, we saw Apple. Apple was a tremendous mover. Now, when we look at a different index like the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which is a price-weighted index, interestingly enough, Apple also had a major weighting in that, and 97% of the Dow Jones Industrial Average points on Friday were attributable to Apple alone. Without that, the market, if Apple was flat for the day, let's say, or even down, but flat, there would be about 10 or 12 point up on the Dow Jones Industrial Average. And between Apple and Google and Tesla and Microsoft, you have the indices like the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ 100 riding higher. And the Apple being over $2 trillion of market cap now clearly the number one overall market cap for the indices like the S&P and the NASDAQ, took it higher once again. So you're wondering why you're seeing this when, in fact, maybe some other things aren't doing as well. And I could tell you something. I would venture a guess that if you look at your portfolio, I'm just holding up the idea of Friday for a second here, but it's a great example. If you look at your portfolio on Friday, I would venture a guess that X the mega caps, your portfolio was probably down and maybe even down for the week. Because I could tell you a couple other things that are going on here that bear this out. For example, we studied and talked about the McClellan oscillator. We've talked about the advanced decline line, right? We talked about these things. Well, it's kind of odd when we look at markets reaching new highs and the advanced decline line is starting to, you know, kind of scratch your head over the last week of what happened there. A little bit of a divergence. And the McClellan oscillator, which takes this into consideration, is at a negative 150. A negative 150 usually is when markets are rolling over. But markets aren't rolling over. Yeah, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was down for the week. The S&P was up a bit. The NASDAQ 100 was up 3.5% or so for the week. But a negative 150 on the McClellan oscillator oftentimes will tell us that there is either one of two things happening. Either there's a lack of participation. In other words, the broad-based nature of the rally is shrinking. The narrowing of those winners to losers is really getting tighter, whereas only a few are pulling the market up. Now, we've seen this time and time again in history. And usually what that means is that when you see that there's only a small amount of participation to the upside, where the rest of the stocks are either down or not moving up as much, that's a concerning area. Now, it may take some time to play out, and there could be a resolution, whereas the megacaps stop their ascent and the rest of the market picks up. But over the last 10 days, not just Friday, over the last 10 trading days, the McClellan oscillator has been sloping down. So it's a bit odd that you see the markets are generally moving higher. And what we have now is officially what we call a divergence. And a divergence is something that you really want to pay attention to. You say, Andrew, come on, markets only go up from here. We haven't seen any significant dip that lasts more than 20 minutes or the overnight hours. We've had 2 days last week where, in fact, the futures were significantly lower. And then when the bell rang at 9:30 in the morning to open up for the regular hours of the stock market, they just went vertical and continued their ascent throughout the entire day to finish up the day at a higher note. And that's what really you're looking for, right? You're not making money in the overnight. You're making money when the markets are actually open and trading. So what does this all mean, though? You know, where you have probably your portfolio X mega caps moving lower, the McClellan oscillator sloping down at a negative 150, where the larger stocks are taking a preponderance of the overall returns on a regular basis. So you have passive investors that are probably doing pretty well, saying, hey, I just invested in the S&P 500 or the Russell 1000 in the NASDAQ 100, and things are good. We see the Dow Jones Industrial Average, again, price weighted, down for the week. Growth still charging ahead. Value going nowhere. Kind of looks to me a little bit like a capitulation. Investors throwing in the towel and saying, you know, maybe it's just the fate of the markets to continue pushing higher for the large caps, and the value side of the equation, just throwing it out, and just why fight it? Why bother? Let's just put our money into, you know, the names. I don't have to talk them to you or tell you about them. You got the Netflix, and you got the Tesla, and you got the Apple. Of course, those two, the last two I mentioned, all about stock splits recently. And you got Google, and you got Microsoft, and you got Amazon. Why bother putting money anywhere else right now when these are the stocks that are getting all of the inflows? You may have thought that. And I think people are thinking that, and I think people are acting on that. But when you start to really look further into this whole discussion, I mean, over the past 10 days, again, the SPY versus the equal-weighted ETF, so the SPY being the market cap-weighted, and we look at the equal cap, so there's no market cap-weighting, it's just an averaging. Over the last 10 days, they've been running in totally opposite directions. The S&P 500 on a market cap basis is up a couple of percent, while the equal-weighted S&P 500 is down a couple of percent. Again, once again, something that we know, but confirmation of this nonetheless, is that the biggest of the big are getting all the attention. Not only all the attention, they get all the money. So you need to ask yourself, can this last? How long can this last? Is this the new paradigm? That we're just going to have these massive conglomerates sucking up all the money from everywhere else while everything else below this, let's even say the next 450 stocks below the top 50 in the S&P 500 are just going nowhere, generally speaking. It is possible. It could last a while. But if you look, I got to tell you, where I was kind of at the end of last year looking at valuations and saying, wait, there's a big red flag going on here. When we look at the PEG ratio, when we look at PE ratios comparatively, when we look at all of this, and they were a bit stretched back then. And then we got, of course, that sell-off that brought things back. Compared to where they are now, we're even further into the stratosphere when it comes to valuations. And then if you look and listen to all of the analysts out there talking about increasing their price estimates for whether it's an individual stock or an index through the end of next year, pretty amazing. That is all based on the fact they don't want to be too far off of what the price is now. The fact that we are seeing that a company like Tesla, which hit the 2000 mark this week, since their split, I think they're up, I don't know the exact number, I think it's up almost 40-ish percent since they announced that they're going to split 5-for-1. That valuation itself is mind-boggling. So why are these names attracting money? That's the question you're probably thinking. Why should I put my money there? Or why are they attracting money? And should I believe in this? Well, for the long haul, really, these are great companies. Probably is a combination of MOMO, momentum, FOMO, fear of missing out. And with such uncertainty that we have right now, you see companies with solid balance sheets and consistent revenue streams, they're in high demand. Why not? Why would you invest in, for example, the banks with a yield curve that's questionable, with the Fed that doesn't look like they're going to back off anytime soon, low interest rates are here to stay for a very long time, and inability to do buybacks of their shares or increase shareholder value through excess dividends and increasing their dividends for some time to preserve their balance sheets, where you can look at a company like an Apple, like a Google, that are doing pretty well and that are going to continue to probably do well unless something absolutely absurd happens. If in fact, you know, we go back into the recessionary time, lockdowns again, and more people are unemployed. But with the trajectory of what we have right now, there's a lot of people thinking that, you know, okay, solid balance sheets, ability to buy back shares, increased dividends, good money on the balance sheets, ability to issue bonds at will at extremely low interest rates, a low interest rate environment. There is no alternative. Why not? Why not? If something's working so well, let's just continue with it. So I think that's what's going into it. It seems a little simplistic, but I think that's really what it's all about. Now we got to switch over to a couple of things that are happening in Asia, in and around Asia. Seems that there's a new outbreak that is showing up in South Korea on alert again, and that sent their stock market down 5% for the week with the concern that there'll be new lockdowns and stay-at-home orders and the potential for a second wave to start coming to South Korea, which had done a pretty good job overall of tamping this whole thing down. So I think that when we look at some of the things that are happening in Japan and other countries, in Spain, for example, in Europe, let's just agree just for the moment and get past this whole discussion, because it seems to be obviously a great part of discussions right now. I don't think I could spend 10 minutes on the phone with a friend or a colleague that the idea of this virus and all this doesn't come up. So we're talking about this a lot, of course, but let's just agree this is not quite over just yet. And now we have Congress and the White House agreeing, disagreeing, but coming up with this skinny deal idea, whatever that exactly means, okay? But we thought there was going to be anywhere from $1 trillion to $3 trillion of new stimulus. There'll be help for the states testing. There'll be money for unemployment. There'll be maybe even possibly a secondary stimulus check going out to people. There's a lot of things that were involved in that. And there's a big fight over this right now. It looks like it's going to be agreed, at least for the time being, about a $500 billion deal, which is not pocket change, but clearly not the same numbers that were expected. And with the fact that we're starting to see that initial claims are popping up, a bit of concern there last week where we saw that they were jumped up by a couple hundred thousand. And where I read a few different interesting notes throughout the week about how unemployment at this point may be as good as it gets for the near term. Or even some that said it's the best it's going to get for a while to come. As we've had this backtracking of openings and these phased openings of the economies throughout different states and cities, etc. The biggest problem I see right now is that without additional unemployment aid, there really could be some pain for the retail, not only for the retail, but for individuals, of course. But retail that got an incredible tailwind from this excess money that was given out through the unemployment compensation by the federal government, the $600 per week, may only be a fraction of that moving forward. Now, even though we saw Walmart and Target and Home Depot and Lowe's report over the last week or so, some terrific numbers, really some more than terrific, the extraordinary numbers as people are doing their shopping and fixing their homes and do-it-yourself, DIY projects, cooking at home. I mean, there was an exceptional increase in revenues, profits, same-store sales, but that was primarily during the period that there was that additional $600 per week that was being paid, right? That was the period where we saw that not only were these people getting that were unemployed $600, but they were getting the baseline that was available from the state unemployment as well. Many people possibly getting paid a lot more now than they were getting paid when they were working. So this was a time there was this excess spending going on. And a lot of things led back to, you know what, if I'm going to be staying home and working from home, I'm going to make sure that I get things that I need. As far as I can tell now, the executive order that President Trump had signed, which would give $400 of additional funds for people who are unemployed, has not kicked in yet. And only three states have signed on to participate for the full amount. In a recent update, in fact, it looks as though most states are not going to participate in the extra $100 that they'd have to give per week. And there was some clarification given that most states won't have to be required to kick in the extra $100. Most have said they won't, but most thought in the beginning that they would be required to. But now there's some clarification that the states will not be required to kick in the extra $100 per week, leaving $300 per week as the additional amount that will be given to people or paid to people who are unemployed rather than the $600 per week previously. Now, there's still a lot of uncertainty about this. There's a good amount of contradictory information that's being passed around by the White House and the people that are involved in this. But from what I can see from reading all of the information as of right now, Initially, it looked like the states would be required to pay $100 to get the extra $300 for a total of $400 payable to people for unemployment in addition to any state benefit. Now it looks like the clarification, just to be clear, is that the states will not be required to provide the extra $100, and therefore individuals who are claiming unemployment will be eligible eventually for $300 per week in addition to their state income. So we really got to think about what kind of impact that's going to have on spending. That's a pretty serious cutdown from where it was before. Just something to think about on how retail is going to be impacted, how spending is going to be impacted. And if we continue to have, as I mentioned before, a very significant amount of people unemployed in our country, how do we justify our economy getting back to levels that we saw last year in the next year or 2 years? It's going to be a really long period of time till we get things back up. And I believe that some of the numbers that we saw recently were very good in terms of manufacturing, in terms of production, productivity, wages, the employment situation kicking back, millions of jobs back in the force. But yet again, it still is a lot weaker than we were before. And that brings us all the way back to the fact that the Fed will continue to pump in the stimulus for a period of time. And stocks are going to have to adjust to the reality of whether or not the valuations are something that can be sustained if we are not just going to get back right away through either a slow process, you know, to 2021, back right to where we were from an economic standpoint, if there's a vaccine that looks like it's going to be probably towards, because there was some vaccine news this week. There was some good vaccine news this week, as a matter of fact. And they talked about how, you know, they're going to be going to human trials in October. But the end part of the discussion of that was that there probably would not be anything available to the second half, at least, of 2021. So again, that takes us a long time to get through this. I mean, we're supposed to be out of this already. And it seems to be going on, and now second waves cropping up around the world. All right, before we get to our guest and the discussion, I want to talk about a couple things. First is let's take a quick glance at next week. We got some key economic numbers coming up. We got the S&P Case-Shiller home prices and consumer confidence on Tuesday. Durable goods and, pretty important, but we know where we're at, the second estimate of GDP for Q2. Personal income and spending will be this week. PCE prices. This is the Fed's preferred inflation gauge, and that will be available at the end of the week on Friday. Earnings season winding down, so waiting, I think, for the next catalyst for markets, and they're going to be looking for what is that opportunity moving forward with regard to, you know, moving the ability for markets to continue moving higher on, you know, questionable economics with a lot of liquidity and very low interest rates being the case, of course, and that is a big part of what's pushing things right now. And if you look at the Fed's balance sheet, I think I put this up on Twitter last week, and you can follow me at Twitter at Andrew Horowitz. The Fed's balance sheet was close to $7 trillion. So we're talking about double where it was just in February. Talking about $3.5 trillion pushed into the Fed's balance sheet through liquidity and into the markets through, you know, quantitative easing, et cetera. And that is, if you look at that chart, looks pretty much like the reasoning, because it correlates so well to why stock prices have moved so significantly. So let's keep an eye on that and keep an eye on all that's going on. All right. That kind of wraps it up for a couple of these things. We have a lot more to talk about today. So before we go any further, I want to mention something. We interviewed Masterworks CEO Scott Lynn. It was a few weeks ago. So if you haven't already listened, it was a great listen. You got to scroll back a few episodes. Really fascinating. I want to remind you of our conversation, since many of you have asked about alternative asset sector investing. So we know that about 90% or so of all developed government bonds are yielding, under 1%, right? and in cash, banks, they're not any better. In fact, you're lucky to earn, what, 1% if you can get that? So if your portfolio is mostly in stocks and funds, you're probably likely overexposed to, we've talked about this, Facebook and Apple and Amazon and Google and Microsoft. And we talked about it. These stocks are really propping up the S&P. They have a combined market cap of what? Over $6.7 trillion right now. That's nearly as large as the bottom 400 stocks. And money has to go somewhere, right? And between being exposed to mega cap stocks and nearly 0% bond yields, you're probably asking yourself a lot, what alternatives are there out there? That's where Masterworks.io comes in. It's something different. It's an alternative to help diversify outside the market, which has historically generated a return of between 10 and 25%. Masterworks.io, it makes it possible to invest in shares of the world's most valuable paintings from artists like Monet, Banksy, and Basquiat. Now, here's what's interesting. Deloitte estimates this at about $1.7 trillion in total wealth that's held in art, growing to almost $2.6 trillion in 2026. So blue chip art even outperformed the S&P by 180% between 2000 and 2018, according to Citi, with almost no correlation to the stock market. So if you're already investing in your 401k every 2 weeks and looking for an alternative asset class, head to masterworks.io. Look for the purple banner that says Request Invitation. Click on How Do You Hear About Us and click in Podcast. Put in TDI as the name of the podcast, and you'll skip right ahead of the line of the 25,000 people that are currently in the wait list. That's masterworks.io. Select podcast and enter the code TDI today. You can see disclaimers at masterworks.io/disclaimer. And with that, it's time for our guest. Let's get him on the line. And our guest today is Pierce Crosby. He's the general manager for TradingView. He received his master's from Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism and a bachelor's degree from the University of California in Santa Cruz. And he was formerly the head of business development and revenue strategies at StockTwits with my good friend Howard Lindzen, I guess, right?
Yep, that's right.
You know, Howard, I know Howard for many, many years. We went back to some of the things he was doing early. He was one of the first guests on our podcast back in the day.
Wow. Yeah, when this all started. Love Howard.
Yep. So I got a few questions for you because I want to really give some good information to our listeners, because I get a lot of questions that come in about how do I track stocks? You know, how do I set alerts and what platforms are out there? And I know I use TradingView, like, for example, your mobile app is just superb. And I thought that maybe you can give me a, you know, a quick down and dirty of what TradingView is and how people can use it.
Sure. Well, again, thanks for having me, and glad to hear that Howard's been on as well. You know, sorry that I wasn't an early guest back when I was at StockTwits, but you know, he was doing the Lord's work at the time. And So you know, now over at TradingView, we do a lot for you know, the average trader and investor. You know, the company really started out as a charting company. So these guys have been building charts for the last 25 years. Before this, they founded another company called MultiCharts, which is a very hardcore desktop software.
I had that back in the day.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, as we were talking about before too, you know, they also were kind of the original architects for some features on TradeStation, as well as some of the features on eSignal back in the day as well. So these guys are, you know, experts when it comes to trading tools. And so the initial thesis of TradingView was do all of this heavy lifting that people do with kind of desktop software, do it in the web, right? So basically create everything as HTML5, make it extremely accessible and easy to use, you know, simplified so that the average customer can get some value out of it, but, you know, advanced enough that the really hardcore people actually, you know, can get a lot of value out of it as well. So it's kind of that impossible feat to be able to do that for both, but these guys have done it quite well. You know, really, we've been expanding our total reach in terms of, you know, products that we offer today. So, you know, our mobile apps are quite competitive and really provide a lot of data information for for free, which is kind of the golden ticket for me. And we continue to grow. I mean, we're now a team of about 300 people globally, you know, kind of working around the clock. So we have teams in Asia, teams in Europe, and teams here in the US. And, you know, we do a lot of business internationally, but, you know, about 50% of our total business is here in the US. You know, I mean, we're kind of the default player for kind of technical analysis, as well as kind of market technology and research. Mm-hmm. And we continue to provide more and more for free, as is best.
So you cover a lot of markets. I know that. What can you kind of give us a broad brush of what markets that you cover that people, you know, if they were to utilize the product right off the bat, just open up the page. I mean, what are you covering?
Yeah, totally. The first thing you'll see when you come to tradingview.com is our editor's picks. And these are selected ideas from across our 25 language sites that we think of as specifically compelling for end customers or folks who are, you know, just trying to get a sense of what's happening in the markets today. So if I look at editor's picks now, I mean, we have some news around Tesla a $2,000 company. So, these are the kind of things that we try to, curate for the average user so that they can really get a sense of what's happening in the market today. In terms of what we cover overall, I mean, we pull in data sets from about 75 exchanges around the world, and these are equities exchanges. On top of that, we pull in data feeds for the FX world. We pull in data feeds for the futures and commodities world, feeds from all the different crypto exchanges. So we connect another 25 or so crypto exchanges.
Yeah, but that's one of the areas you're really solid on is crypto. I mean, there is a ton of information available. I mean, really, you don't have to go out and find it. Just go right there, and it's pretty easy to search and grab whatever you want.
Yes.
And it's per exchange, I mean, obviously. So,
totally.
So when you say curated work, I mean, you have these authors that write and blog and they do videos, they get voted up, I guess, right? Kind of like crowdsourced mm-hmm. ideas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the real competitive advantage for TradingView is that it's not just a tool, right? It's also a network. So we have upwards of, on a monthly basis, about 15 million people visiting the platform. You know, a small portion of those people are actually contributing ideas, right? So these are trading ideas, research, or even just looking at, comparables, right? So if you're looking at Tesla versus Ford, which is what I was doing earlier today, relative price performance just absolutely blows my mind.
Yeah, that chart must look good.
Yeah.
Got a flat line on the bottom and one that spikes up to the top.
It's crazy. And, you know, the same with Toyota, right? Like I was looking at Toyota as well. It's just on a relative basis, it's just mind-boggling. Anyways, so yeah, people share these ideas every day with the community, and really what it is a support network. It's all these people that are coalescing around trades and giving competing views, shared ideas, as well as maybe markets you're not covering or watching, right? So I think it's a great discovery engine and definitely something that that makes TradingView different for sure.
So that's interesting because that's the other thing people ask. Right. Where do I get ideas from? Now you run into problems with this, right? Because you got the Reddit that is providing who knows what information on and who knows who it's benefiting or not, right? And that actually has become a very strong source for a lot of people for ideas these days since the lockdowns, right? And since everybody's trading.
Sure.
But when it comes to the idea generation, there's technical analysis that you have. You have the screener I want to talk about. The screener you have, which is a combination of fundamental and technical and other features that's pretty robust.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the screener itself is a great amount of data for people that maybe wanted to take a deeper dive on certain parts of the market, not really know where to get all this information. So we have in total, 75 exchanges as well as we have global fundamentals data, so you can get fundamentals data on Indian stocks if you want. You could do looking at a macro and figuring out, all right, what has the lowest price to sales ratio and is also hitting its 52-week highs. Those are the kind of things that we really try to surface to individuals. I mean, I actually use the screener more than I use the charts, which is amazing. We're known for charting, but the screener to me is a pretty competitive feature, and And we're definitely looking to add more to that. You know, one big request is actually a filter on filters. So being able to look at the, you know, only stocks within a certain kind of market cap range as it applies to those that have a specific trading range or fundamentals data in combination. So we're getting increasingly granular there, but really, I mean, it's extremely helpful for me, not just for, you know, equities investing, but on a macro level, you know, looking at how, say, the European market is trading, you know, on a price to sales ratio, price to earnings ratio, you know, versus maybe the S&P 500 or something like that, because right. It gives you a much better sense of, you know, how things are doing internationally versus domestically, and, you know, how I should be positioning myself versus, you know, maybe how the larger market is trading.
Yeah. And you have, I mean, when you click on a stock, for example, what's nice is that you have some news on one quadrant of the page, you have a mm-hmm. chart that comes up, which is your basic chart. And then you can go into the next level chart, of course, which is putting out a ton of indicators. But you also have your little dial, the gauge, the technical analysis, buy, sell, hold, and give some reasons why that is as well. So that's kind of cool. And then you have all the news. You have a lot of, how many sources do you have for news?
In totally about 120 sources of news. We just launched a global partnership with Reuters. So we have all Reuters news feeds. Again, this is something that people would otherwise pay, you know, upwards of $1,000 a month. We did a global license, so obviously it costs us a lot of money, but we're able to pass that on to users for free. But yeah, in total, I think we're hitting at about 110, 120 news sources today. And, you know, we continue to add new partners all the time. We really just try to keep a filter on, you know, what do we think of as really addressable of the market today. So a lot of, you know, kind of unique crypto research that we have now, nobody else has, as well as, you know, equities research that we get from the likes of whether it's Zacks or Motley Fool or Seeking Alpha. We pull all of that information into TradingView so that, you know, you could otherwise go to all these different platforms every day, or you could just go to us and basically we can provide you pretty much everything you need relative to what portfolio you're holding.
So that begs the question, if a lot of this is free and you're paying all sorts of money for it, what's the revenue model?
So we have a very strong advertising business, but in addition to that, you know, as you may know, and as some of our, you know, listeners may know, people can pay for premium products, right? So, you know, people pay anywhere from $10 a month up to, you know, on the high end, people pay $500 a month. If you wanted all the data under the sun, all the, you know, additional indicators, alerts, custom scripting languages, et cetera, that really all are paid products. But really the way I think of it is about 85% of what we do as a company is free. And then that last 15% is for the really hardcore kind of market practitioners who want to, you know, kind of take the training wheels off and, you know, do all of their technical analysis as well as, you know, kind of research. We really kind of blow the doors off with the additional amounts of features.
Right, because you have a dual model. You have an advertising model and you have a subscription model.
Yep, so I mean,
that makes sense. So it's nice because you can pick and choose. I mean, really, I'm not trying to totally fluff you up here, but that's kind of cool because you can then choose what you want, whereas like a Twitter is an advertising model or Facebook is an advertising model. I know totally different companies, but, you know, you would think that they would come up with this hybrid model somehow that you could pick and choose what you want so you don't have to be inundated if it's not something that you want to see and all that. You also have the ability to trade directly with brokers now. So you can pick from a list of many, many dozen brokers and trade directly. It's on the TradingView site. You click a button, I assume, and it routes it to that broker, right?
Yep. So we've been doing this for about a year, and we have some big announcements coming up in the fall around this. So it's something that I actually, you know, pushed for when I joined about 2 years ago. And it's a huge competitive advantage for the company, but it's also something that users really love. You know, if I can connect directly to my TradeStation account, my OANDA account, my Saxo Bank account, you know, all of which have different geographical preferences, right? So, you know, Saxo's only allowed to be in certain markets. So, you know, we're their trading partner in those markets. You know, TradeStation is heavily focused on the U.S. and Europe. And so if I'm, you know, living in France, I have a trading partner there. So it's really great because at the end of the day, you know, we ourselves are not going down the route of being a broker dealer, but we would, you know, I mean, we really do, you know, need those connections on yeah. TradingView. So sure. we've had a huge uptick in interest there. And
I'm sure.
And as a result, you know, like I said, lots of announcements coming up this fall.
So I want to round this out with one other question and discussion about the programming language, something called PineScript, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so what's interesting is a lot of people have ideas. They're like, you know, I've seen a lot of times where I'm going to make something up very basic here.
Sure.
Stock you know, touches down to its 50-day moving average and the slope of the 200-day average is up. And we see the RSI is also crossing above this. And, you know, mm-hmm. and the stock is above $5 and hasn't traded above this level in 10 days.
Sure.
And they're like, you know, they have to search and figure out, well, how do I find something like that? And they've seen it before work and all. The PineScript allows you to, or pretty much anybody, to provide a programming to create their own indicators that they could utilize, and there's no cost for that, right?
Yeah, no cost at all. I mean, the great thing about TradingView is, again, we try to productize for both the average customer as well as the really hardcore customer. And so, you know, on the high end, we have people that are coding up, you know, dozens of scripts every day. And some of them are being shared with the community, so you can actually find a bunch of these which have been open sourced. But our coding language, which is Pine, is pretty widely used. And the Pine community on TradingView is extremely vibrant. You know, we have probably per month about 10,000 or so people producing scripts.
Wow.
So really it is kind of a vibrant platform where people are looking to code up their own kind of rules and then use that rules-based engine to, you know, come up with better trading ideas.
Now, is there automation or is it just simply indications?
So currently it's indications, but we are in preliminary talks with some firms to actually go the full automation route. And that's definitely in the works.
I have mixed feelings about that, by the way, from someone. no, I mean, do whatever you're going to do on your side, but I just have mixed feelings because, you know, what I've seen in the past, and I do a lot of work and we've done a lot of work on specifically coding for the TradeStation platform and other things internally and externally. But one of the things is that oftentimes people think that automation is a panacea and they just turn it on. You know, automation sometimes is only stock or index or futures or crypto specific for an instrument versus where some people say, oh, that seems to work. Let's put it on all these five different instruments and just let it run. But that's, mm-hmm. I mean, obviously everything needs to come with a warning that not all these things work all the time.
Yeah,
in the market.
No, I mean, I think the biggest thing with markets these days, and especially because we've seen such a boom in retail trading recently, is give the people the kind of disclaimers and understanding that, you know, this is not a surefire thing. Like, just because you have the tools doesn't mean all of a sudden you're going to become wildly successful. You know, I think one of the big problems that we see in the industry today is that people are giving away all the trading tools, but not giving any kind of education or information around the subject matter.
Yeah, true.
And what that really does is, I mean, you know, it basically puts people at a place where they're going to blow themselves up. Ultimately, that's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
So we're all about providing the tools, but we're also all about providing the education so that people actually do this successfully, which is a big differentiator.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, I appreciate you coming on, Pierce Crosby from TradingView. What we're going to do is we're going to put a link into the show notes for episode number 676 on thedisciplinedinvestor.com on the ability to check out all the different features of TradingView. So hit that and you'll be able to find out more about this. Thanks so much for coming on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. Appreciate it. And anytime.
All right, thanks. You know, the more I've been looking at TradingView and all the different things they have, it really is a cool site. And for those of you who have written me in the past about, well, how do I track my alerts and how do I track my stocks and how do I keep up on what's going on? How do I get trading ideas? How do I look at what's going on? Well, that's the point, right? I think they must have heard us. They must have heard our discussions about where do you get all this information? Because we use TradingView, we use TradeStation. There's a lot of overlap in the two and some of the things that they do and how they do it. But this is a web-based application that's pretty cool. And I think this is something that you really find interesting. And I would tell you, if you start using it, you're going to probably use it in your overall toolbox for something. Whether it's just tracking, let's say, indices or just tracking futures or just tracking cryptos, or maybe just creating your watch list and looking at your portfolio. There's going to be something, because they have a great app as well that you'll use. But definitely go over to the show notes for this episode. I put a couple of links in there that will give you, I think it's a 30-day free trial. Yeah, it's 30-day free trial of the TradingView platform. You can check it out. So click on the link over on episode number 676 over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. But I do think you'll like it. I think the charts are really cool. Anyway, we're going to end it right there. And we are going to be back. I think next week we have a discussion with the with the creator and the founder of Foodable.tv. I want to talk about some of the trends in the restaurant business, as well as what's happening with regard to the stay at home and people cooking more, and what's going on with trends in terms of what people are doing, how they're dealing with this. Are they cooking at home? Are they getting some of these meal kits? Are they looking at buying and getting food in? Which particular apps are they using? This is going to be great. Paul Barron from Foodable TV. He's a good friend. I've known him for a while. Never had him on the show before, but I believe that's coming up next week. We've got a couple of food things coming up. Actually working on, hopefully, the CEO of Traeger Grills. This is a smoker. I use it, and I think it's pretty cool. We're going to work on him in the next couple of weeks as well. I want to thank you for joining us. Make sure to check out all the podcasts from the past. We have some great guests on over the last several weeks over on The Disciplined Investor. You can find it at the website, thedisciplinedinvestor.com, on Apple, on Spotify, on Player FM. I mean, there's, you know, just wherever there are podcasts, this is running. So thanks for joining me, and I will see you again next week. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.